Well, hello everyone, and welcome to another Focus Podcast. I am your host, Singing Lisa. This is the place where we inspire, motivate, empower, and impact. And of course, the Akula Foundation has been bringing to you the Reminiscence Series, and we've been meeting wonderful people doing great things in the community and beyond. And so, of course, you see I'm sitting with a beautiful young woman here, and she has a great story to share. And of course, we all know that in the Reminiscence Series, we talk about the past, and how before COVID, what life was like and how we are different today. So we're going to meet Charlita Carr, and she will share with us her journey. And she has a very interesting job. Of course, she's in the health field, but APRN is her title. And we're going to get into what that stands for, because you may be familiar with it, and we'll learn all details about how she's successfully handling that and much more. So welcome, Charlita.
Thank you so much for having me.
It is a pleasure. And of course, I'm excited every time we get to learn more news and more great information about what people are doing as we live now in this COVID-filled world. And so I'll ask the question that I've been asking everyone that I've talked to. What was your life like before COVID-19?
Well, my life hasn't changed that dramatically, and it's because I've been devoted to healthcare. So my life is pretty much still just rounding, taking care of people, assuring people that we will get through this. And so for the most part, outside of doing what I do all the time, the only thing that has necessarily changed is that the little time we have off, I would take a trip once a year. And so that has pretty much been on pause. But other than that, it's still been hitting the hospitals, hitting the communities, making sure people understand that we will get past this and how to stay safe during it.
Well, of course, encouragement is definitely necessary. And I know helping a lot of people who benefit from it. But what was it in your mind that started to come to realize that this was something big coming our way, that we needed to maybe make some changes?
I don't think I really realized it was big until it was here.
You're not alone. I'm pretty sure.
So, I think everybody pretty much after Mardi Gras season realized that something was hitting when the mass numbers started coming out. The hospital started being very overwhelmed, and it's pretty much hit everybody at the same time. I think healthcare workers as well as lay people. So for the most part, that didn't change. But once it got here, I think it was important for us to explain, especially being in the minority population, of how that affects us, especially since we were hit a lot harder than most other populations, and what we could do to keep ourselves safe.
Yeah, and absolutely. In the beginning, that was not a known factor, because mm-hmm. it was just something coming and then suddenly quickly, and then everybody taking action to try to address it and really help people.
Yeah, I think the providers saw it.
Okay.
I know I saw it in the mm-hmm. hospitals. I saw it strategically hit a certain population more than others. Mm. But it was hard to get that through to the population, because I think it doesn't become real until it affects you. In COVID, this is the first pandemic I've ever been through. I think it may be the last. I don't know, God spare life. Mm-hmm. But I think what it did was most people, it hit everybody's home. Or it hits everybody knew somebody that got affected by it. And so that made it real. So I think a lot of times what was spread in the media initially, not knowing so much about it, not intentionally, but just that it doesn't affect the young, or the young will get over it. Now we're seeing a much different thing. So getting through to people that even though you may overcome it, your loved one may not.
Yes.
So, you know, it's bigger than just about the individual. I think that's what COVID has taught us.
Yes, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Well, before we jump further into the conversation, you see, we are ready to go. We want to let Charlita really explain. Many of you are wondering, what is APRN? And I looked it up, and I had to find out myself that it means advanced. And I'll let you say what it is.
It's advanced practice mm-hmm. registered nurse. It's actually just the official title of the nurse practitioner. So I think the lay term for most people would be nurse practitioner, you know, NP, nurse practitioner. Even when we speak of ourselves to most people, that's what we call ourselves. But legally, what we write on paper and what we're known as is advanced practice registered nurse. We're still nurses. We've just gone to school. We've become more advanced at what we do, and we're able to diagnose and assess and plan for patients, basically.
Well, we appreciate that, because any more increase in knowledge always benefits the patient.
Absolutely.
And so that is definitely something to say congratulations on.
Thank
because
you so much.
There are not many people that we know a lot. I think it's becoming more popular now, nurse practitioners.
practitioners, but we're used to the doctors and the nurses and everyone else who is a part of the usual team. Mm-hmm. But then sometimes I think you get a little shock when you find that the nurse practitioner is coming in and not the doctor. So you're saying, well, where's the doctor? And so you've had to probably maybe remove some stereotypes or remove some misunderstandings about exactly what you're able to do. So would you clarify maybe exactly what that is?
I think, and this, the community may not like this an entire lot, but I think that the physicians are always somewhere in the background at some point. So nurse practitioners, we've gotten very good. We're used to bedside. We've been in the field a while from a nursing standpoint. We've seen a lot. We've grown in our career. And so that advanced portion is basically us just going to school and getting that extra part of how to, all of the pertinent positive and negatives of how to diagnose. But I think that even when patients see us, you know, especially the elderly population, they're not used to other providers. They're not used to the term healthcare provider. And while that is great and we are able to provide, then we should also still know our limitations and know that there is always sometimes at some point a purpose where we may have to go back to our collaborator until we gain most, even physicians, we're always learning. So as nurse practitioners, I think it muddies the waters a little bit because while we are able to show a different realm of a provider in that sense, we always sometimes still have a need to also get our back up because there are things that we may not see that we may need that physician support. So while we're in the community, we're all as one team. We all need each other and we're all just utilizing each other. So it is new for the patient, but just realize that even when you don't see that physician all the time, usually somewhere along the line, they're always still in the background somewhere helping us out as well.
And thank you for that. And do you find that because of what you're capable of doing that frees the doctor to maybe see some patients that they might not be able to spend as much time with to even initially give more attention to because you all are still a part of the team?
Well, I don't know if it was meant in that capacity. I think over the long term, in the future, looking from the future standpoint, they saw that the people with technology, people are living longer. So people, there's much more patients than there are providers. So we were meant to put to bridge that gap. Okay. So we were meant to function more of as a team completely of what we're doing. So while we can get our own practices and work independently of some sort with a collaboration of a physician if it's needed, I do think that what it was meant to do is just bridge the gap and bring more providers so that if you have patients with things that are not so like critically ill patients, then we are able to free those physicians up for the critically ill patients or basically to just add to healthcare for patients who may not otherwise get it.
Yeah, and I think still at the end of the day, you all are still collaborating.
Correct.
Still coming together to share the information to get the best outcome for that patient.
Correct.
So I think that is fantastic.
I think that's what gets lost in it, is that there's a collaboration between us, even if they don't see them all the time. And it may not be every single patient needs a collaboration, but for the one thing that we may need, then we are taught in the realm to know of what things, what piece of the puzzle is missing so we know what to go back and look for.
Yeah, that's important. And well, you know, that's good news for us because more people to take care of us is always better because our outcome is better. We have more. I think, you know, used to be said, you know, two heads are better than one.
And
so I think in the medical field, that would really serve a great purpose because you have different schools of thought, but still coming to the same conclusion that's best for the patient to recover and to be well. So, okay, now we've learned that she's a nurse practitioner. She is on our side and she's here for us along with the doctors. So we appreciate that. Yeah. Now, did this journey begin with that in mind?
Absolutely not.
Because I am learning that you are not only have accomplished this, but you have a large family.
Yeah.
You have biological children and you have children with that extra love that you have to give.
Yes, absolutely.
Oh my goodness. So share, take us back. So now we're going to jump into the past portion. Take us back about Charlita growing up and what was your interest as you were developing?
Well, I mean, I think that nursing is definitely my passion, but I didn't always know that. So I think that I'm a big Christian. And I believe that God strategically put me where I needed to be. And he put me in the right places at the right time to make connections. Where even when I didn't know what I wanted to do with my life, he was always in the midst of it. So I can remember working in the prison. And basically, I can remember just having babies. I have five babies. My baby is 24 now. My kids range from 30 to 24. But I can remember sitting at home and being very confused about what I wanted to do with my life. And just seeing a commercial on TV about medical assistance. It was like, okay, I guess I could do that. And so I signed up for that and did that and ended up working in a prison as a medical assistant where I had my first code or CPR case. And I remember it just was like automatic. It wasn't, I didn't even blink an eye at it. And the physician tapped me on my shoulder at the end of it and was like, go to nursing school. Yes. And I said, okay.
Wow.
And that started my career.
I love it. Well, you didn't have the fear or you pass out like some of us probably would
have. I did not.
Have.
I was built for it. And yes. I could just remember being in nursing school and knowing things that I felt like I shouldn't have known. I always studied, but there was a time when I looked back and didn't realize how I learned or where I got to where I was. And I think it was just because it's my gift.
Wow.
So, yeah.
I think that's well said. A gift is something that you have nothing to do with but to use it.
That's it.
And I think that's wonderful. So, everyone, we're speaking with Charlita Carr and learning a lot of great things about this wonderfully diverse young lady. She's doing a lot of things, and we're glad about it. So, now, is anybody else in the family going to follow in your footsteps?
Not sure. My daughter seems to think that now she's a dental assistant, but she thinks now that she wants to go into a nursing track. I do have my baby that's 24 that's going to medical school, but I don't know what she'll choose, what realm of medicine she'll end up choosing. Yeah. And then I have a son with an economics major, a PhD in economics. So only one so far that's thinking about going to medical school, and then possibly a daughter going to nursing school.
Wow.
But they're kind of stumbling. I want them to be whoever
sure.
to use their gifts. So I just let them stumble and figure it out.
That's wonderful. So everybody's in the house studying. Well, I mean, that's a good
everybody's
thing.
Gone. Nobody's in the house.
Nobody's in the house? Congratulations, somebody said.
Nobody's in the house.
Fantastic. Yeah. Well, then now, so your days are devoted to the job and to providing all of the care. How have you grown from when you started? Not just in the side of knowledge, but your development and, you know, your faith has a lot to do with that. How have you seen yourself change and evolve over the years?
I think it's been a long process, but for the most part, starting out at bedside and then just always growing, always just looking for more. How can I help others? How can I do more? And it's evolved to this of the nurse practitioner. And even so, I've been very blessed with the jobs I've had. And looking at I've been a nurse practitioner 7 years. So when I look back at my first 3 years or so and how I felt, I was a 20 plus year nurse, and how I felt coming out of nurse practitioner school, it empowered me to write a book so that nurse practitioners, when they come out and they feel like they should be stronger, or maybe this isn't for them, they'll realize that these feelings are normal and the different things that we can fall prey to as nurse practitioners, because again, we're not physicians. So we do have different governmental bodies and things that are put in place so that there will always be some type of governance. And so just making sure you're falling into the right governance, because all of it is not necessarily always a good thing. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's a learning thing, but if you could avoid it, it's always good to avoid it.
Absolutely. So, anything that, you know, you can skip a few steps is always
absolutely
a good thing. Well, as you are in your practice and you're working and you're meeting all of the different persons and caring for them, how do you feel your faith and your experience comes into it when you have to speak to someone and, you know, they're nervous, they're not used to what you do or your position, but they've accepted. So how do you find that bedside manner, I suppose, when it comes to that?
I think it's a natural thing. I think we learn that, and nurses sometimes seem to have it a little more because we spend a lot of time at the bedside with patients delivering direct care. So when you convert over or transition over to the provider, it's a lot easier to continue that bedside manner per se. Sometimes I think it's pretty difficult because you still have to see a certain amount of patients per day. Mm-hmm. And so if you get tied up and don't know where to cut it off, there can be like a gray water there. But I think it's a good thing because what it allows us to do is allow the patient to open up and to feel comfortable from the very beginning. So I think sometimes it's a matter of just, is it innately in you, learning patience, learning that even when things don't sound right, give the patient an opportunity to speak, because we're learning as well. So we're always learning. Medicine is a science and an art. So it's one of those things that if you sit back and you listen to your patient, you actually gain stuff too, and it may not always be medical. So,
I love that you said that. I think that's one thing I've shared with doctors as we've been having this series, that because of the virtual appointments and the tele appointments, they have been able to see their patients in different settings, in their home and around their family. And I feel that some of the care that's provided maybe comes a little differently because they're able to say, well, let's add this, you know, maybe a little extra walk up the stairs, or maybe your family member can share and do this. So yeah. I find that it, do you have you had those experiences where you find that the diagnosis takes a different outcome maybe because you're able to apply some other types of
absolutely and not only that, but a lot of times patients will come to office and it doesn't matter how much you say bring your medicines they're like, I forgot. Or the big thing is, I didn't take my medicine this morning, I was rushing. So when you can catch them in their home environment and be like, go get that bottle, bring it here, let me see it, then it just makes a big difference.
Yeah. And so what is the biggest thing that you think a patient to doctor relationship can do to improve? Because again, we find that we, in those moments, they are just moments. And you have to sort of tell everything that's been happening in the last, since the last time. And that's difficult because you do have so many people to see. So yeah. You're trying to really hit the high points about what needs attention right now and how do we manage for the next 6 months before Correct. We come back. What is the thing that the patient can do to better have a better experience?
Write stuff down. Mm. Because especially if it's a first visit or even if it's a continual visit, sometimes patients will forget. They have things that they want to say and they forget it by the time they get to the office. Or just teaching moments. Communication and teaching is a huge impact. It can make a big difference in your practice. So for patients specifically, if you think you're going to forget something, write it down, especially if it's very important to you. Write it down and don't be afraid to ask anything.
Yes.
At all.
I love that.
Sometimes we can see, they don't see us as people all the time.
Yeah.
And so it's important that they realize that we are people as, mm-hmm. you know, we have our own. Sometimes we may be going through the exact same thing you're going through. Yeah. So just spit it out, speak it, mm-hmm. you know.
So conversation, I think, really makes a difference.
Absolutely.
In sharing.
Absolutely.
Well, and I learned something some time ago that there is such a thing called the white coat syndrome.
Absolutely.
And so would you share what that means? Because when I learned about it, I said, wow, that makes sense. But maybe some people listening yeah. have not heard of that. And what exactly is that?
So hypertension just means elevated blood pressure. It's a term for patients who have been coined with or diagnosed with having elevated blood pressures. And the blood pressure is basically how hard your heart is working to get blood out. And so if you're always elevated, then the heart's working extra hard. And at some point, it will get tired and you could end up with a lot of other medical problems that you don't want. So in essence, what white coat syndrome is when a patient is nervous and they come to the office and their blood pressure is elevated, but in their home setting, the blood pressure may not be elevated. Wow. And so it's every time a patient comes to clinic, they're elevating, their blood pressure is more elevated than it should be. And or that it usually is.
Yeah, and I'm sure probably with the tele appointments, people have said, oh yeah, I told you I was fine. Because we're already at home and I'm good because I'm in my environment. I love that. I'm going to take just a break and we're going to come back with more with Charlita Carr.
The Akula Foundation, founded in 1994 by Dr. Shiva Akula, is the nonprofit foundation of Canon Hospice Foundation. Originally dedicated to providing hospice care to the indigent community, the vision and mission of the Akula Foundation envisions recovery from grief and loss through innovative programs for the community, providing compassion, professional support, continuing education, remembrance therapy, chronic illness, and palliative care services. Individuals in Louisiana and Mississippi, as well as patients and families of Canon Hospice, also benefit from these services and more. More information about other programs providing great benefits, such as Camp Swan, a children's bereavement camp, offering 3 yearly gatherings, grief support, continuing education, and advanced illness management programs, can be found at www.akulafoundation.com. Akula Foundation can also be found on Facebook at Akula Foundation and contacted at 504-818-2723. The Akula Foundation relies on donations from the community. Consider Akula Foundation in your next tax-deductible donation, online or by mail. The Akula Foundation is available for you.
And of course, everyone, we are back. We are talking to Charlita Carr. She is our nurse practitioner. And I like to say that for shortcut, but I love the title. APRN means you've done a lot in the realm of school and education. And so now, would you say that that is a nurse practitioner is someone who just wants to do more beyond a registered nurse? What would make a person excel to that next level?
Well, I think it could be a lot of things that make someone excel. Some people could be like, I was getting older. I said I was a 20 plus year nurse. I worked ICU. I pushed heavy beds with patients on ventilators, with neuro drips, bagging patients. So it was very strenuous. And at some point I was thinking to myself, what's my exit plan? I'm not going to be able to push this bed at 60.
Yeah.
So what am I going to do if I plan to stay in this career? Mm-hmm. And I did. Mm-hmm. So for me, that's what drove me to go back to MP school. Some people just say, I like caring for others and I want to know more and I love the body and the way it works. And I just want to learn more about that. And so they do that. So I think people stumble into it for different reasons. And some people are just born saying, this is what I want to do. So, yeah.
I love it. And then of course I read where you have an opportunity to have your own practice as a result. So have you taken advantage of that?
I have, but so it's a dual practice. I work for a physician doing rounds in an acute care setting. And then we have a clinic together, but it just kind of branched off and he has his own group of patients and I have my own. So it's almost like we have two separate clinics rolling in one building. Mm. So I do have a small patient population practice where I see patients 4 days a week for 4 hour days.
Okay. What was your mindset at the start of the year? Do you normally have New Year's resolutions and you try to have some goals that you want to maybe accomplish as a new year begins? And
historically, I've done that and never kept up with them. But this year was different. And I keep going back to that religious piece because I feel like it's so important. But about 6 years ago, which was 1 year out of my nurse practitioner career, mm-hmm. I was already thinking about how am I going to advance myself more? Mm-hmm. And so doing so, I think it must have been on my mind, but I dreamed in the middle of the night and I felt like God was giving me a message about the book specifically. Mm-hmm. So I pondered on that for 6 more years.
Not too long.
6 years. And I kind of just didn't do anything with it because I didn't know how to move. So the one thing about life is it will teach you how to just sit still sometimes. Mm-hmm. And so that's basically what it taught me. So for my New Year's resolution this year, I said, I'm going to write it down. I'm going to do a vision board. I'm going to make it happen. Mm-hmm. I'm going to write that book. And that's what I did.
Oh, right.
Well, so I saw myself at least by June of 2020, before I even knew the pandemic would hit, writing a book, publishing it, and in some form trying to get it out there.
Yeah.
And so I was able to accomplish that goal.
Well, please, I've been waiting to get to that. Tell us the name of the book and what is the message behind writing it.
So the book is Practice Pearls. And the subtitle is A Comprehensive Guide on the Transition from Nurse to Provider. Because as I said, it's an untapped territory. So nurses, it's apples to oranges when you cross over from being a nurse to bedside nurse or any form of nursing, whether it's a school nurse, in education nurse, a bedside nurse, to that of a provider. So I think although we see it all the time, we don't realize how tough it is to be a provider. And it's even though the medical world and the jargon is what it is, medical terminology is what it is, there's a whole different set of terminology among the providers. And when you're starting to trying to figure out what the x-ray report says. And so it's a whole different set of terminology. So basically it's just a guide in all forms, telling nurse practitioners as new nurse practitioners, how to market themselves, how to set up for success in the business early on, how to practice safely. Of course, that's very, very important. How to talk to physicians because sometimes a physician, as I said, people don't see them as people. Mm-hmm. So even as nurses, they don't see them as people. They see them as so much higher regard and they should be respected in higher regard, but they are colleagues when we come over and transfer over. And so it's a way to respectfully speak to your colleague as well and learn things. So all the intimidating things about transitioning from a nurse to a provider, those are the things I speak of in my
book. Wow, that's a great book to have. So everyone pick up your practice pearls so that you can have your copy. Thank you. I'm glad you brought it, because is there a particular chapter that is very meaningful to you that stands out?
Well, of course, my last chapter.
The last one.
Keep God first.
Well, we don't get this opportunity very often, but hey, we would love a read really quickly for maybe a page or so that would, you know, really stands out.
Okay, so I'm going to do the keep God first because it's the most important to me in everything. We can't get anywhere without God.
Yes.
So I said, in writing this book, I've primarily spoken from my heart on things the novel APRN may not know based on my personal experiences and the experiences of my colleagues. All the topics mentioned earlier are relatively crucial to your career as an APRN, but none, in my opinion, are as vital as this chapter. This chapter speaks on the center of your universe, which is God. Without Him, we would not be in the position we are in now. The APRN role encompasses a power and respect that most of us do not realize we have, especially the novel APRN. It is a proud moment when you start making decisions and understanding the effect you have on the patients and your peers. Be careful not to get caught up in the feeling and subconsciously or consciously create or exhibit feelings of superiority. Regardless of how powerful you feel in your new role, keep God first. He is the head and the tail. Nothing is given without His approval, and if abused, it will be taken away. I implore you to seek God daily before the start of your day. When you do this, you seek His protection from the things you cannot see, and you create a peacefulness in your spirit that the patient can feel. As the new leader, you may not recognize how much you are being watched. How you are viewed is determined by your interactions with everyone, and your spirit heavily influences those interactions. The patients, nurses, doctors, housekeepers, certified nursing assistants, lab technicians, ward clerks, family members, to name a few, are all observing you. They are observing your knowledge, kindness, empathy, humbleness, and general interactions. How you respond is grounded by pure love in God. That's just a little bit of it.
I love it. Oh my goodness. Congratulations on that.
Thank you so
much.
It's
absolutely beautiful. So practice pearls, and where can everybody get their copy?
www.npsense, NP Nurse Practitioner Sense, as in common sense. Or you could go to amazon.com, either one.
I love it. Yeah. Well, we'll definitely have that in the link so that everybody can get the details and get their copy of the book right on time with that. Well, I love it. And I thank you so much for sharing that. Now I've got something right here that I'm calling focus questions, because this is our focus podcast. And so just want to give I guess they call it a fire round really quickly, but you know, what is it that keeps you focused? How do you stay focused?
God. I know I keep saying that, God. And then when you think of your patients and you see the success cases, or you see every case will not be a success case. I mean, we can look here at Cannon Hospice. There's a reason that hospice was made, and it's because we all have to die one day. And so patients who may not have a success case per se, but maybe at the end of their life, just being there for patients and giving them the respect so that they could die gracefully and with respect, all those things are important. So just keeping God and then the patient first, and then just being true to yourself.
I love it. Yeah. Well, where do you get your strength from? Who inspires you? It's okay for
you
repeat
me to say to God.
As you were growing up, were there other moments, maybe your parents and other people in your family that you followed, maybe in the first? Are you the first to be in the medical field?
I am.
You were the first. Okay. I love it. Well, so then now daily, I'll say this. How do you relax? Because you've done so much all these years. How do you unwind and relax to, you know, get recentered?
So I think I get recentered because I dedicate every morning. I dedicate time to myself and just meditating with the word, which I believe is what guides me every day. So that is my peacefulness and calm for the most part, because when I go home, I continue. My drive is to always do better, to always do better. So I'm always working on something.
And that's a good thing. That's
so
a good thing.
My calm and my peace is definitely, I wake up an hour early, extra hour earlier, just so that I could have that me time with God and read the word and process it so that it could start my day off.
I love it. Yeah. Okay. What trial or challenge have you overcome that's allowed you to enjoy your success?
There's been many. There's one I want to speak to because I'm not sure who's watching this, but if anybody is watching this who feels like they just can't do it, there's obstacles against them. You heard me say I had 5 babies. My 5th baby I had when I was 24 years old. My first was at 18. So I had 5 babies back to back from 18, 19, 20, 21, and 24. Everybody had written me off. It doesn't matter how much common sense I had. I went through struggles. Every family have drugs in their family. I had it in my immediate family. I was homeless at 18. You can accomplish anything you want. Keep God first. Keep your foot to the ground. Keep moving forward. And you can accomplish anything you want. I'm definitely a success story because of God, because I overcame many obstacles. And then when I did overcome those obstacles with the grace of God, then I had to learn how to manage that money and keep from destroying myself. So all of those are things.
Well, I know many who can benefit from that, myself included, because better time management, better money management, it's all...
And we're still learning every
year. Yes, we are. And I think this year 2020 has proven to be, you know, in some ways it's been mostly, I guess, the negative impact that people have experienced. But in many ways, I've heard so many talk about how they have done better. They've learned better. They've become better. They've realized life, more importantly, which has made them better.
Absolutely.
Appreciate family much, much more. And so I think this has been a year where maybe people started off with one vision in mind, but another visionary, and we'll say God, had another plan for more information to come to everyone and for people to realize, I think, that they need one another and that they need to focus on many more things that are much more important than all the things that life continues to come our way.
I think the pandemic has definitely brought us closer together as a people.
Absolutely.
And that's important.
So now, as you go into 2021, I won't say what's your resolution because you've written the book. So what are you looking forward to? Maybe are you operating any differently because of what has happened this year? As you go into 2021, what will you do that may be differently or just more involved?
Definitely more involved. So the book is just the tip of the iceberg. Definitely. I'm looking into education, online seminars, teaching people from every angle I can, especially just trying to keep people abreast to what's out there. As we know, I talked about the minorities, and we as a minority, we hit very hard with COVID, especially with the Black Lives Matter, everything that has occurred. I think us as a minority are very skeptical about the government. And so I think right now it's the worst thing that we could do is be skeptical when it comes to things like the vaccine. So I think it's important that we get it out there, that it's moving in the time that it should have moved. Yeah, normally we have 2 years to plan, at least 2 years to plan for VASS and to do studies, but we're working with a pandemic, so things are a little different. We've been in masks for almost a year now. So some of my patients have been a part of the study. They've had more time. Everybody is locked down. Nobody's going to work and doing things. So there's been more time to focus on this VASS. And I do think that we should definitely look at science, look at your beliefs, but don't make it just that I don't trust it. This is another Tuskegee study. Look at it, put your homework into it. If you don't know it, ask somebody. And I'm definitely dedicating more time to speaking on it so that we as a people can be informed and make informed decisions.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned that because I know the vaccine is what everybody is looking to because it's in the news, it's everywhere. And so you are hopeful for it. And many have been concerned about the timeline that has happened because they've heard or they're familiar with a longer amount of time. It's been said that some of the studies that are part of this were actually already underway because other, you know, research was already in motion for a vaccine of other kinds that would serve. So we shouldn't be overwhelmed and thinking that this is just too fast and too rushed.
I don't think we should look at the time in terms of rushed. I think we should look at more of how it rolls out. Is it being offered to everybody consistently? And it is. I think it was definitely a good move when they say we're going to offer it to healthcare workers and the geriatric population first. It's not like they're rolling it out back in the days. I keep speaking to that because I hear a lot that Tuskegee study, they're not going to just practice on me, but they're rolling it out to everybody, Black, white, Hispanic, Asian, it doesn't matter. They're rolling it out to everybody, which makes a strong statement at letting people know, hey, this is not being targeted for just one population. Mm-hmm. So that should put some of that ease, some people's mind at ease with that. Do your homework. People are talking about the side effects, but also look at the side effects of what happens if you get a very severe case of COVID. So if you get a very severe case of COVID, there is brain cerebral effects of it, where people are confused, they can't get their thoughts together, heart conditions as a result of it, breathing problems as a result of it, activity intolerance. So there's major side effects that comes along with getting a bad case of COVID as well. And you can't predict that you'll get a good case or a bad case based upon your age or your comorbidities. Because as you've seen, healthy have died from it, older have died from it, young have died from it. So all in between. So you just can't, you can play Russian roulette if you want to, but I think you want to make a very informed decision. Mm-hmm. So look at all the effects, look at the side effects, make yourself a list of pros and cons, and then make your decision based upon that. And don't just be part of the in crowd and say, oh, I'm not getting it. It's going to harm us. Do your own homework.
I love that statement. Very empowering for those that want to know and want to be prepared and want to make that right decision, not only for themselves, but for their family and for their future. And of course, as we, you know, embrace this new normal, as we're calling it, and some are saying, you know, let's not call it that because this is just the way of life and where we are. Do you see a return to any type of what we may have been doing before as we move forward and after the vaccine is administered?
Well, I think if you're optimistic, then you have to look at a way out of all of this. I wasn't a part of the Spanish flu or any of the other pandemics that actually hit the country and they came out of them. Yeah. So that's what I hold on to, is that this isn't the first time. When I looked at those commercials and it seemed like history repeating itself of mothers giving birth without people present when there was another pandemic, and I can't recall which it was. I'm not a great historian, but I did see the commercials. Then it let me know that this too shall pass. Yes. So yeah, we'll get back to normalcy.
Well said. Yeah. I love it. Well, everyone, this has been another Focus Podcast, and I want to say thank you to Charlita Carr. She is a phenomenal nurse practitioner. And again, her book entitled Practice Pearls can definitely be yours through Amazon, and you can make a great gift to someone, even yourself. Gift yourself and learn all about what may be in your future if you're in the health field. I think it's a beautiful title.
And if I could say one other thing, sure. If you go to my website, www.npsense, I also do lots of teachings on different body systems, disease processes, and I give pearls on my site as well. So my site is also a great place to not only purchase the book, but to get a lot of good information. And then you can actually sign up for my newsletters as well.
Oh, I love it. Yeah. I'm so glad you said that. And so is there one thing that you would suggest to someone when they say, okay, you know, you're a doctor, you know things. What do I need to do to really improve my health? What's the one thing I can start doing like today?
Go to your doctor regularly. Most people think that they only go to the doctor when things get really bad. So very few people just keep up with their health maintenance. Those things were put in place for a reason. So keep up on your health maintenance. Read as much as you can, but be careful about what you read, because I mean, the Google Docs, you know, it'll have you thinking you have all kind of stuff. So the best thing you can do is to keep up with your maintenance visits and then speak to your doctor about those things that are concerning to you. Keep up with your blood pressure. Those are silent killers. Keep up with your cholesterol levels. Those are silent killers for stroke. And like I said, just visit your doctor if you're a very healthy person, at least every 6 months. And then if you're somebody with diabetes or hypertension, unless you're controlled in all those areas, you should be making visits every 3 months to keep a check on all of that until you get it controlled.
And should we be drinking water a lot? Or is there?
I mean, people are not going to like what I say. I think the body.
Rules of thought on that.
I think the body makes enough water all on itself. It's always a great thing. If you're going to drink a soda, drink a water instead. But you can actually do harm by drinking too much water as well. So it's a good thing if you just want to. If you're going to pick up a soda, yeah, pick up a water. A water is definitely better than a soda. And there's all these flavored versions of it now that are still healthier than a soda.
Yeah.
But I don't think you should just be gouging water just because.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I think we need a part two to this, because I'm hearing a lot that we need to continue in the conversation, but I'm so excited that you have taken the time to share with us today.
Thank you for having me.
It's just been our pleasure to have you as a part of the Reminiscing series. So everyone, I know we'll hear more from Charlita Carr, but please reach out to her and get the book and get connected so that you can find out more about your health and about how your future can be great, because she is here for you. So again, until the next time, this is Singing Lisa with the Focus Podcast, and you stay focused.
Stay focused.
I'm Singing Lisa. Thanks for listening to the Focus Podcast, where we inspire, motivate, empower, and impact. Be sure and check out the show notes in the description on how to learn more about my guest today and connect with them. Also, subscribe and leave a comment. You can listen to the Focus Podcast on your favorite platforms, including Spotify, Google Podcast, iHeart, iTunes, and Radio Public. Thanks again for listening, and until next time, stay focused.